Welcome back, everyone. This is Eric Ellefson. Thank you for listening again to my podcast. Today, I'm with Brian Dick, who's the professor of psychology at Colorado State. He's founder and chief science officer for Jobsology, which I'm going to ask him about a little bit later. And he's author of a great book that I've had the opportunity to recently read, Make Your Job a Calling. And I know, Brian, you're working on another book as well. But I wanted to start because in this book, Make Your Job a Calling, you talk about calling as a transcendent summons experienced as originating beyond the self to approach a particular life role in a manner oriented toward demonstrating or deriving a sense of purpose or meaningfulness, and that holds other oriented values and goals as primary sources of motivation. Now, you even admit in the book that that's very academic. But it's very meaningful if you pull those bits and pieces about out of that. You know, just take a few minutes here and kind of how did you get to this place? And then even from this book written in 2012, like what have you learned even about a definition about calling like you wrote back then?
Sure. Well, I mean, how did I come to it? That's kind of that requires sharing a little bit about my personal journey. When I was, I'll give you the short, maybe not the short version, but not the long version. When I was a college student, I really kind of struggled with major life choices, including what I should do with my career. And so I remember being a junior or almost a junior in college. And I don't think I quite got letters from the registrar saying that we're not going to let you register for courses until you declare a major, but it's possible that happened. I just couldn't decide. And the reason was I was interested in a lot of different things. And the thought of choosing one path, if that meant not choosing something else that was really appealing, left me in a state of paralysis. So, you know, for a variety of reasons, I settled on psychology. And I went to graduate school in counseling psychology. And part of it was, you know, I was a good student. I wanted to help people. I was interested in learning more about research and all that stuff. But I chose counseling psych because I knew that counseling psychologists could teach, they could do research, they could consult for organizations, they could go into private practice, lots of different possibilities. So by choosing that path, I knew that I would essentially be delaying the decision on what exactly I had to do with my life. So, fast forward a little bit, I ended up at the University of Minnesota, which is a top counseling psych program. And I didn't even really realize it until I got there, but it's a program that is known for its contributions to career development, research and theory and practice. And so here I am still trying to discern my calling, learning about all, you know, decades of research on how to make good career decisions. And we had a clinic. We actually had a clinic, and I was a graduate student doing training, learning how to facilitate career counseling for folks. Now, some of these people that would come into that clinic were kind of middle career adults. Objectively, they were very successful. Subjectively, some of them were just completely miserable. They could hardly get out of bed in the morning. They hated what they did so much, but they were tied to it with the golden handcuffs. And, you know, some of them would say things like, I wish I had discovered my calling. And that was really interesting for me to hear, because here I was doing a lot of reading on that very concept, calling. What exactly does this mean? But everything I was reading was, you know, history, philosophy, theology, and it hadn't really occurred to me, hey, what if psychologists had to say about this? And so I did a literature search, you know, lit review to kind of see what have psychologists had to say. And it turns out they had said almost nothing. I mean, there were fewer than 10 published studies that had attempted to investigate this concept. So that's the point where I thought, okay, maybe one way that I can use some of, you know, my gifts and the training that I've been blessed to experience would be by actually carrying out some research on this concept. And so that's when I finally started to get my own sense of calling. As it turns out, lots of other people would start to do this kind of work as well, and it's become a really hot topic in the field. But that's the point where I decided to dive into it. Now, you asked about that definition. If you're going to start studying something in psychology, you have to measure it. And before you measure it, you have to define it. So we tried to define it. And what you read is I hear it now and I cringe because it's horribly long. But really, it boils down to three things: the transcendent summons, purposeful work, and a pro-social orientation. So that summons piece just recognizes that if there's a calling, there's a caller. In a country like the U.S. especially, there's a lot of people who identify the caller as God. But psychologically, it doesn't necessarily have to be spiritual in nature. It could be the needs of society or a family legacy or something like that. But the point is, there's something kind of beyond the self that compels you to think of your work this way. Then purposeful work, the idea here is what I do all day for my job doesn't compete with and it isn't segmented away from what I view as my purpose in life. Rather, they align, they're in sync. So there's a kind of harmony between how, you know, what I'm spending my career doing and what I feel like I'm on this earth to do, my purpose. And then that third thing, the pro-social orientation, that just recognizes that at least the way the word calling has been used in history, it's not about me. It's not about me, first and foremost, my own personal happiness. Rather, it's about what I can contribute to other people, to the world, to the community around me. The paradox there being that when we're focused on what we're contributing to others, we experience enormous joy. So those three things, to me, were characteristic of a calling. And so we kind of, you know, published a paper where we defined it, and then we followed that up with a scale to measure it. And then we've used that in a series of studies over the better part of a decade to learn what difference does this make for people.
So let me ask that question then.
Yeah.
You know, and I know it can go way too long, but what difference does it make?
Well, the bullet point answer would be what we've discovered and what lots of people have discovered, you know, so what? I think 12 years ago, I did that lit review and found fewer than 10 studies. There are more than 300 now from all over the world. I mean, this is sort of a global phenomenon, research on this topic. But anyway, what we've learned is that people who approach their work as a calling experience more joy and satisfaction in their work. They're more confident about where their career is headed. They experience their work as more meaningful. They put in more effort than do people who think of their work in other ways. And it's not just something that benefits the way they think about their career. People who think of their work as a calling also indicate that life as a whole is more meaningful and satisfying than do people who think of their work in other ways. So we know that a calling is associated with a lot of benefits. We also know that it's not just about having a calling, it's about living a calling. So that's a really key distinction. It is actually possible for some people to feel like they've got a sense of calling, but then not find an opportunity to express it or live it out. And those people actually suffer. In fact, it's worse to have a calling and not feel like you're living it out than to not have a calling at all. Although the people who are thriving are the ones who both feel they have a calling and feel they're living it out.
So I mean, you, in the book, but then also, you know, in this idea is you talk about, and I like the title of the book is Make Your Job a Calling. And then you go into some of those, you know, issues of like, what about retirement? Or what about if your job doesn't necessarily match up with this calling? Or, right. You know, or even, I think you just even mentioned kind of mothers and fathers, or, you know, just some of the multidimensional nature of it is, if I feel like I've got this strong sense of calling, but I'm not able to work it out, or I'm in a job that maybe, you know, you even mentioned the difference in the book between job and career and calling, and maybe I'm in a job that, you know, I do and it provides and whatever it is, you know, how can I set my mind or even my heart to that place of generating the meaningfulness from it? Or do I got to find that sense of calling first?
Well, that's a great question. And there is a reason we call the book Make Your Job a Calling instead of Find the Job That Is Your Calling. Because that's another thing that we've learned from research on this. A calling is not a thing to be discovered, like keys in your couch, you know, where they fall out of your pocket, you don't know where they are, so you kind of search, you're looking for it, and then you find it, and so then you stop looking because now you've got them. So a lot of people think of calling that way. I used to think of a calling that way. It's something you discover like in an aha moment, and then you know what it is, and you ride off happily into the sunset. The reality is when you kind of have that initial sense of a calling and you make a career choice, that's where it just begins. You know, that's not the end point of discerning. That's the beginning. So sense of calling is an ongoing process. It's almost a lifestyle. And really, if you talk to people who identify with this concept in their own lives and ask them, how do they approach their day-to-day work? You'll very quickly see that there is this way in which, although they're very adamant that they're living their calling and it's very meaningful and brings them a ton of joy, they're also constantly asking, what else can I do? You know, how can I do more? How can I be more effective? How can I expand my sphere of influence? What other opportunities might there be that I can pursue that will align with this? So I think it's a misconception to use language like discover your calling or find a calling. It's more a calling is a thing that's built, that grows over time and that morphs and changes. And the other thing that's relevant to this is that a calling transcends any particular job, right? So I'm very blessed to lead workshops at places all over the place. And I always ask that question, how many of you feel like your work is a calling? And usually about half of the people in any room will raise their hands, maybe more than you might expect. But then I ask those people, okay, tell me what your calling is. And nobody, like I go to a lot of colleges and ask that question. Nobody says it's to be a biology professor or, you know, it's to work in residence life. Instead, they say things like, you know, it's to help our students optimize their potential, or it's to help people think critically and creatively and engage real world problems when they leave here. And, you know, you can pursue those particular purposes through lots of different roles, right? And I think that's a comfort to people in today's world of work where you know, there's a lot of job change. If there's one thing that you can count on, it's an uneven path with lots of changes.
Well, so that's what I was going to ask you, and maybe tie it into, you know, just even a question I have as a professional. I'm an academic and college counselor at a high school in Silicon Valley where, you know, it seems like I've been out here now for 7 years. I've been in the education profession 20 years, and it just seems like, you know, things have shifted maybe three times in the economic world and in the technical world, and even in that short period of time. And you and I grew up similar times, right? You know, you're going to go to high school, you either go to college or you go, you know, it was still that kind of end of that time where you go to college or you go get a job, you know, technical training, you know, blue collar, white collar stuff. And then you talk about college stuff where it's like you go through that process. You might stop by Career Center once in your 4 years.
Right. To have your resume proofread.
Yeah. Or just even, you know, they want to house your letters of recommendation. Sure. And so now we're at a place where, you know, in this massive shift in technology and how it changes it, how do we start having some of these conversations where, you know, job is in career is much more fluid in the sense of your calling might be worked out in multiple different ways over the next, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And you may have different kind of segments to how this plays out.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that is becoming really important in the career development world is this concept of career adaptability. It's like the number one skill for anyone, not just young people, anyone to develop is the capacity to transfer their skills to new opportunities, to cope with changes that are inevitably going to present themselves. And, you know, to kind of develop the capacity to read opportunities and have the wisdom to decide, is this something worth pursuing or not? And the people that are ultimately successful are the ones who develop that capacity, who can cope with change and roll with it and look at, okay, how have the experiences I've developed right now, how do those translate into this new opportunity? Because a lot of people, maybe of our generation and certainly before, you train for one thing and then that's the one thing that you know. And if you lose a job and, you know, in your field, it's devastating. You feel like you can't do anything else other than a different version of what you already had been doing. And I think what we're recognizing is that in order to really be successful forging a path in today's world of work, you have to think less about the parameters of the job and more about the skills that you possess and the ways that those transfer into other opportunities. And when you talk about yourself to someone interviewing you for a prospective opportunity, it's less about these were the duties in the last job I had and more about these were the skills that I learned and that I deployed. And these are the ways that those will, be an asset in this new opportunity. So the more we talk about, adapting and transferable skills and things like that, I think the more capable people will be of being successful and forging a path in this crazy world of work. But while all that's happening, the sense of calling, if you think of it as something that transcends any particular job title, I think it's just as easy as it's always been to have a sense of coherence. And actually, if you ask people who have changed careers a lot, which is now the norm, most of them are able to tell a story that connects all those different jobs and even different careers that they've had together. I mean, I'll just speak for myself. When people ask me, what's your calling, it might depend a little bit on who I'm talking to and what they mean by that. But I usually will say something like, I think it's really about helping people understand their gifts and then identifying opportunities to express those in ways that make the world better. Now, that's something that I pursue in the way I teach as a professor. It's something that I pursue in the types of topics that I engage in research on with my graduate students in our lab. And with Jobsology, the types of products that we develop, it's really all focused on helping people understand their gifts and then identify pathways through which they can express them. So that, to me, that's one calling, but it's expressed or pursued in kind of three very different types of activities that I'm involved in.
And so let me ask this question a little bit about Jobsology, because I think there's always this interest that I have in, innovation and technology and, in some ways the extension of, your personal calling into a wider world. How is Jobsology, how did it develop and how are you using it to really extend this research and extend this opportunity for more people to discover, a sense of meaning, a sense of purpose, a sense of calling, but even in that, be more precise in understanding themselves and where they fit.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that I learned in my life, my personal life, is that a sense of calling is not something for most of us that is kind of revealed in a burning bush. It's something that we have to really discern. It's communicated in an indirect kind of way. And a really key way, one of the things I've learned from vocational psychology, a key way to discern that is by looking at our gifts. And I use that word very broadly. I don't mean giftedness when I say gifts. I mean those things that make us unique, our interests, our values, our personality traits. And so, Jobsology started actually as a grant project. We got a grant from the U.S. Department of Education to develop take what we had been doing in career counseling and kind of automate it in a piece of software. And the problem we wanted to solve was how can we, career counseling is very expensive. And at most schools, for example, it's usually one person serving thousands of people. At Colorado State, I think our career center has a staff of 12 and we've got 35,000 students. I mean, just do the numbers. So I don't think anything replaces kind of one-on-one assessment and counseling. It's just really most people don't experience it. So what can we provide for folks who don't access it? And so we got this grant to develop this kind of crude assessment system just to try out some of our ideas. And we partnered with the community colleges in Colorado that have big problems with attrition and you know, don't have a lot of resources to provide career development support. So we built this system that a person can log on, take a few assessments, get a sense of what makes them unique in terms of interests and values, work-related values and personality and workplace culture preferences. And then we develop some algorithms that take that information and combine it and then match them to different job titles. And it's not something that turns discerning a calling into some formula. But it does leverage the science to give people a sense, okay, based on my pattern of attributes, here are some career paths that really could fit me well. Maybe I should learn more about those and explore that. So it was really to kind of, you know, inform that process. And, you know, at the end of that grant project, my collaborators and I realized, hey, we have a pretty cool idea here. But if it was just up to us, it would remain a cool idea and a few academic papers and a website. So our university fortunately recognized that this was something that could be commercialized. They connected us with a couple of entrepreneurs, and we sought out some investment so that we can, you know, take this and grow it and then give it to the world, you know, make it something that other people can access, much more so than would be the case if it was just up to a couple of professors.
So let me ask one last question then, you know, and I mean, I think as you look at this, you know, and as we go through this process and as you think about what you've learned over these years, you know, in this profession and in your work and in even discovering this for yourself, but now extending this out into other places. And I think probably get into that story, right? And you hear, it's interesting when you look back at the story and, you know, it makes sense. As you look forward, you know, it's not clear.
Yeah.
You know, and what, like, and I'm in education. I talk a lot with educators. We spend a lot of time. Like, are there any suggestions that you would have for us to say, hey, listen, just stop doing this and start doing this? Or, you know what, if you do this one thing with your kids, with each other, it just changes the conversation significantly of where we could go and what we could do in helping people find that greater sense of meaning and purpose.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to distill down into kind of one thing. If I did do that, I would say keep the main thing the main thing. So a lot of educators went into education because they had a passion for helping students learn and for helping them develop as individuals. And that's a pretty powerful calling. So, you know, I think in our own lives as educators, there are a lot of specific, you know, different ways or roles that we can take to pursue that overarching mission, that sense of calling. So, you know, there's part of me that wants teachers everywhere to think, okay, you know, how I can innovate. I can think about using new technologies. I can kind of try to navigate this complicated political system that we're in that has lots of implications for my livelihood. How can I do all that while still being faithful to what brought me here in the first place, which is this passion for helping students learn and develop and contribute to the world that we live in? Then in terms of specifically what educators can do to help students, depends a little bit on the age of the student, right? Because there's a developmental course that's involved in this. But I do think a key thing for young students to recognize is that, you know, they're unique individuals with gifts. And there's kind of a well-roundedness that's important to cultivate, but also balancing that encouraging well-roundedness with an equal dose of encouragement to explore deeply those things that seem especially interesting. You know, so you have to be a little bit careful not to kind of push a student down one path too early where they're not engaged in learning about other things, but you also don't want to discourage them from diving headlong into something that really seems a passion of theirs. And one last thing I would leave with folks, one of the things that I've become more curious about as my career's gone on, it's this role of role models. I mean, one of the most powerful roles that educators play is serving as a role model. Students look up to you as a teacher, and they want to learn not just about math and science and language arts and so forth, but they want to learn about how to approach life based on how you've approached it. And so when you talk about discerning a calling and career decisions, don't hesitate to share about why you do what you do and what path you traveled along to get there. People are very reluctant to do that, to self-disclose. They don't want it to be about them, and I get that. Or they say, not many of these students are going to be teachers, so maybe my story isn't relevant. Well, it is relevant, because even if not many of them end up teachers, all of them will have to look at their gifts, look at opportunities that face them, and then make decisions about how those things match up. And you went through that process, and you know it's turning out okay. So don't be afraid to share that, because students will grab onto that and they'll begin thinking about how that applies to their own lives.
So Brian, let me ask you maybe a personal question to finish then. Because I think about, and you and I grew up in similar communities. I think about Mr. Bosman and Mr. Roloffs and, you know, some of these different teachers or educators, or just even the men and women in my community who, you know, I think about Mr. Van Dyke, who lived it out professionally, but then personally, Mr. Vanderwall, you know, all of these different characters. You know, who were a couple people for you that lived this out, you know, as role models, whether it be in the school or in the community or, you know, just in your sphere when you were a kid?
Well, that's a great question. I've often shared with folks there never has been one individual that I've kind of looked up to and said, I want to model my life around what this person has done. It's been sort of a collaboration, a community of folks. And so, you know, I can think about, professors, I could go back and think about teachers that I had early on who really, you know, invested in what they saw as some gifts and helped me develop a sense of basic competence that, hey, I can actually do some things that might have some value. And then in college, you know, the kind of modeling of what it means to embrace all areas of learning in a way that is, that incorporates your core values. And then my PhD advisor, who, you know, just had this passion for understanding the kind of research that we were involved in. And then, you know, another graduate student who was a few years ahead of me, who just was the best teacher I've ever seen. I took bits and pieces from all of these folks. And I think part of that is why I dabble in a lot of different types of activities now, is because I've found things that I've admired in people and wanted to kind of see what that would be like. And some of them have stuck and others haven't.
Brian, I really appreciate your time. I really appreciate your expertise, your work, and thanks for sharing with me, and look forward to, you know, spending more time with you, the new book that hopefully will come out, and then just connecting with you in the future. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's been fun, and I am very honored to have been invited to participate in your podcast. Thank you, Eric.
Thanks, Brian.